Hey guys, welcome to Unpacking Design. I'm Mike LaValle.
And Tim Ung, and this is a show where we tell you about products and ideas that relate to designers all over the world. Hey guys, welcome back to Unpacking Design. For 2019, I wanted to start coming in with topics that might be a little bit controversial, but just topics that have more to do with something that a lot of designers face in their careers, in their lives, things like that, that you and I both might have a lot different perspectives about.
And as usual, I have no idea what you're about to talk about.
Yeah, and so this is one that comes up very frequently between myself and other designers, young and old. So it's not like something that's just related to millennials, right? It's not like we're just going to be preaching about how millennials are beat down and told to quit, right? It's more like this is something that everyone will face. And it's something that I think we can talk about how people can potentially get out of this and move on in their career. So today we're going to unpack career growth.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is I'll give you a backstory to why this came up as a topic. So something that comes up all the time when I talk to young professionals now who have started working and they've been in their careers for 5 years or 10 years, right? They'll come in and we'll chit-chat and catch up with each other. And one of the biggest things that always comes up is, you know, I've been working for 5 years as an intern architect or as an intern designer. And I'm still just an intern. Like, I haven't moved up to a design role. I haven't moved up to an architect role. I haven't moved up to a graphic designer role. I haven't moved up. And it's always a lot of banter about, you know, I haven't gotten to a point where I reach the project manager role, you know, or where I can help others around the office. For some reason, people get stuck, right? They get pigeonholed into this one role that they were hired to do, and that's all they ever will do.
Right.
With the exception of maybe some income growth here and there, right? But other than that, it's pretty silent.
Like,
it never actually changes for certain people. And now, I think it's a great topic for you and I to talk about because you're in the architecture world of, you know, the professional world for how long now? Like 12 years, 10 years?
This 2019 is my 11th year.
11th year. I was so close. I was just guessing. But for me, this is my, in June of 2019, it'll be my 6th year. So I'm about half of where you are, right? And within that time frame, we've gotten to different points in our careers.
Sure.
So I started as, we used to be called intern architects, right? It's like any designer. When you start working, you're just an intern.
Right.
But now they don't allow that term.
Yeah, it's got a stigma to it.
Yeah,
it implies that you're not paying somebody.
That's right. Either that or that someone is lesser than others that you can pick on them, right? I don't know why people would pick on someone like that, but that's just, it became the norm. So then a lot of people start as this intern. It relates to every field. It's not just architecture. And what happens is they start there, and maybe 3 years in, some people will become designers, and then they'll become something else, and then something like they'll start moving up. I have seen a lot of people who started at the same time I have, who are still doing either intern or designer one level things.
Sure, sure.
And they're in 6 years, just like I am.
Yep.
And it's kind of like, and it's not at my firm. This is like, you know, nationwide.
Absolutely.
And it's a big issue because this idea of upward momentum in someone's career is important for everybody. And for me, I had such a different trajectory. I started as an intern, and then within the 6 years that I've been here, I jumped from intern to designer to architect, and then now product architect, where I'm kind of doing assistant managerial things so that I can grow into a manager role. And that's within six years of starting.
Right.
For some people, they might think, wow, that's fast. For others, they might think, "Oh, that's cool. Like that's what I want." So how can people get there? Like, how is my path different than someone else's? And what was your path like before we move on?
Sure. And this is a great topic. I didn't know you were going to bring this topic up, but it's absolutely in my wheelhouse. It's something I talk about a lot, especially on. I mean, that's why I started the Evolving Architect blog. I mean, that's all it is about career development.
Yeah. The only reason why I bring this up between you and I before you jump in
is that
we took different approaches to upward movement in our career. You're going to share how you did it, but then mine is totally different. Mine has been at one place. So,
sure. So, in Where do I want to start? I think career growth in some ways, at least in my mind, it actually started for me in high school, which might sound really far away. It sounds far away to me as I say it because it was like 16 years ago.
Yeah.
But the first step, I think, to career growth is if you know what you're going to do, which I was very fortunate to know that I wanted to be an architect. I knew I wanted to go to school for being an architect.
Yeah.
To have the, not a plan that's set in stone, but to start thinking about what each major step might look like. So, for example, I knew that I wanted to go to one of the best schools that I could either afford or that I could get into or that I could whatever, because mm-hmm. Not that I wanted to be like a Frank Lloyd Wright or a Frank Gehry or one of the Franks, as like a like the epitome of great architects, you know. But I knew I wanted to set myself up for a life that had more opportunity. And so I looked around for things that would give me those opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I applied to a bunch of schools. I ended up going to Syracuse University for 5 years. And when I got out of it, even actually while I was in it, I was looking around at different places. I looked at places in every city you could think of, major city in the country. I ended up coming back to Buffalo, where I'm generally from, and I started working almost immediately. Now, the caveat on this is that I started working 2 or 3 months before the world melted
yeah.
and there was a recession.
Yeah.
So I'm coming at this from a place where, you know, this might be a weird thing to be proud of, but I think that, and we'll get into this as we talk about career growth, but I think something that insulated me a little bit was my mentality of how I developed my career. So what I mean by that is I am very proud of the fact that I was able to maintain my employment at the place that I worked at through the majority of the recession.
Yeah.
And I feel like I did that because I set myself apart. And that's the only reason why I bring it up now. It's mm-hmm. not because I like, wear that as a badge of honor that, like, you know, I'm so special or anything like that. I mean it from the point of I was trying so many different things and trying to push myself beyond where, like, the average person was.
Yeah.
That I feel like I was able to stand out in a positive way for the people who employed me. The partners at the firm I worked at, the people that were around me respected what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And because I put myself out there so often and so well, I think that that was a formula for success that I've just tried to keep cycling. And just like if I get through a new step in my career, I just keep looking for, okay, well, what's the next thing? So for a lot of people in our profession, it's getting your license. Mm-hmm. You know, for other people, it might be getting an accreditation for sustainable design, or it might be being part of a committee. It might be a number of things, mm-hmm. right? And you're always, I think the thing that's always motivated me is if I can look to the next thing, the next reasonable thing to do that I see other people are having either challenges with, but if I get to that point and I accomplish that goal, that I will be that much better for it I'll have more options, I guess is kind of what I've always thought mm-hmm. of it as. If I have this thing or I achieve this thing, it will give me more options than the person next to me
mm-hmm.
if they don't have that thing. And, you know, I look back at my stuff that I've done, my resume, whatever. And you realize if you have that mentality over time, that you start, it's not something that's going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm still working on things like that, you know, 11 years in, it's always going to be like that for me. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to be trying to set myself apart, not because I want to be quote unquote better than somebody, but that because I come from that mentality of that recession hitting me right after I came out of school, mm-hmm. I've always tried to insulate myself on the what if positions if I lose my job and I need to do something. Now I can practice on my own because I'm a licensed architect and I can do that if I wanted to.
Right.
I have so many more options for myself than I would have if I had just kind of gone to work every day, 9 to 5, punched in, punch out, mm-hmm. and it's just never been me anyway. I've always been that sort of overachieving person in some ways, mm-hmm. that for good or bad has put me in a very positive position in my career so far.
So how did you go from being the intern to being a designer and into being an architect and into being, you know, product architect and a manager? Because these are different roles within the profession.
So I think you have to prove it in some ways to the people around you. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I did was I positioned myself in a way where, like, I'm not tooting my own horn, but I do feel like I do have some level of high quality design talent. Mm-hmm. And that does set me apart in some instances where people respect, like, I will go up to people and they'll say they want me on their teams. That's actually come out before, where people, when I moved to the job I'm at now, people were excited because I brought something to the table that was something that, you know, wasn't maybe as common in that workplace. Mm-hmm. And to be respected for that is something that's great, but that happens because I put myself out there and I'm very opinionated about design and I'm very opinionated about high quality execution of that design. Mm-hmm. So for me to be the guy who's always looking at Architectural Record, which is a design magazine, or architect magazine, and looking at all the projects that are happening around the world and trying to glean from them precedence and information and putting myself out there in a way where I'm at the bleeding edge of mm-hmm. whatever the next thing is, that's the first step, is trying to see what you're interested in and going like all in to say, look, this is what I'm passionate about. And it might not directly relate to it, but for me it happened to. Mm-hmm. So that was a fortunate circumstance for me. Like, I've always loved architecture.
Yeah.
So I've always been interested in finding out more about it, understanding how something, if it looks cool, like how did they fabricate it? How did they execute it? And I got to this place where over time, that repetition of doing that and showing people that, you know, I always had magazines on my desk at work mm-hmm. and, you know, Mike's the guy to know about this. You know, you start getting those people talking about you, even if you don't have the formal credential to do something or whatever, that might be the first step to just show people your passion. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the problem that some very younger staff get into is that they either just think of it as a job, mm-hmm. Which is fine. I mean, your life is your own, and whatever you want to do with it is up to you. But I think that the one thing I've seen is there are two types of people in the workplace. There are people who are really, really passionate about what they're doing, mm-hmm. and there are people who just aren't.
Yeah.
And it's not a good or a bad thing. It's just that the people who sort of rise to the top are the people who have that passion. Mm-hmm. I work with a wide variety of people. Everybody comes from their own background. They're doing their own side hustles, potentially. Mm-hmm. They're doing their own thing. And the one thing that sticks out is that passion. So I think that's key. That's like the first thing mm-hmm. to understand. Going from position to position is also timing.
Yeah.
Knowing when to ask for more responsibility. Mm-hmm. Knowing, I've been very fortunate in some weird ways where I was in a good position as a support role on a project, but then someone might get another job mm-hmm. or leave the firm or whatever, and maybe I wasn't ready for it at that time to be at the next level, but I was the person who had gone to all the meetings, mm-hmm. knew the project in and out. Maybe I didn't have all the technical skills at the time, but I was hungry for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was ready for the next thing.
How long did it take you to go from being the intern to a designer, then from designer to architect?
So
I think that's a really important question that everyone's always wondering about. Like, how long are you talking about? Like, yeah, I can be the most passionate guy, right? But if I'm at the wrong place, I might never go from being an intern to being a designer.
See, I think that's, if I go back and I think about it, I was probably doing things, it probably took 2 or 3 years to like really get from the initial level to the next level. Mm-hmm. And then I don't even see it, at least in my case, I never saw it as going from intern to designer to architect to project manager. I probably skipped one of those and ended up just managing things.
Yeah.
And I think that was because of the trust that I had built up over the like 3 or 4 years previously, mm-hmm. to the point where I just kind of like found myself like leading a project one mm-hmm. day. And it wasn't, it's the same thing of like building habits. You do it so often over time that at some point you just like wake up and you're like, oh, I'm this thing, or I'm mm-hmm. doing this thing. And it's hard to say, because I know that everybody really wants to make their career, you know, they want to be the master of whatever they're mm-hmm. at, like really quickly. But I think especially with something like architecture, and you could go into any creative endeavor, but the thing I relate most to is the profession of architecture, and it's a very slow burn of a profession. Mm-hmm. There's no way, I think the thing that I realized a couple of years ago was that I will just never know everything. Mm-hmm. And I will always rely on people who are more aware of either a product or a system or a thing yeah. or a whatever for the rest of my career and the rest yeah. of my life. And it will just always be that way. Mm-hmm. But I can make the margin between those two things thinner and smaller mm-hmm. and closer together, so that I'm getting as close as I can to be knowledgeable about something, but I don't have to know absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So you just wake up one of these days, and for me, I just recognize the fact that like I couldn't force my career to be I couldn't be a partner in 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't happen unless you like decide that you're either going to blow off everything, and like it's literally not possible, because yeah. to be a licensed architect you need like 3 or 4 years worth of experience anyway. Yeah. So I knew that there were certain milestones, and maybe that's another way to help gauge it, is I wasn't worried about my actual position at my office. I was worried about things like when I could get licensed and milestones in my career that were in my control mm-hmm. and not in the control of somebody who hired me.
Yeah.
Because I felt like the things that were most successful for me were the times where I took the initiative, and, you know, it took me, I think, 4 or 5, well, actually at this point, it's been 5 or 6 years it took me to, from the point I left college to the point I got my license. And, you know, in that time, I knew that I really wanted to do a bunch of things, because I was working towards those milestones, but you also need to leave in fluff for circumstances. So like I was saying, one day I woke up and I was managing projects. That happened because of a fortunate thing that happened for my career. It mm-hmm. just happens. Like yeah. I can't, the reason why your question is so difficult in some ways for everybody to yeah. generalize it is because luck in some ways does play a part in this.
Yeah.
You know, being at the right place at the right time, mm-hmm. you know, I was on a staff where it made sense for me to take over a major project, a project that I was like 10 times as much as whatever cost wise for the mm-hmm. project that I had ever worked on.
Yeah.
And for me to be managing it with the help of a partner and the assistance of somebody who was a professionally licensed person. Mm-hmm. But that trust was there because I had built it up over time, and I was in the right place mm-hmm. to take that over.
Yeah.
And there, depending on where you work, who you work for, how the dynamic is of the place you work at, mm-hmm. there are so many like weird little factors that yeah. like you can't, I don't want to overgeneralize the things that are out of your control, but the thing that's always set me up for success in general is that I've positioned my either my milestones that I'm working towards, or I've positioned the things that I've tried to accomplish in a way to set me up for that success, so that when it happens, I'm ready for it.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense, and you hit a lot of good points there. The only reason why I was asking about the time frame portion of it is because it is different for everyone, but it's more to give people a background as to how long it took us. You know, sure. just you and I as an individual.
I mean, maybe to help people out, to generalize it a little bit, I would say on average I see people spend 2 or 3 years in the first initial role
yeah.
where they're doing nothing but learning. I'd call it in some ways grunt work, where mm-hmm. you're doing repetitive tasks so that you can get good at them
yeah.
and then go to the next level.
Yeah.
I'd say it takes another 2 or 3 years to be in that middle zone, mm-hmm. or that like low middle zone, where you're given a little bit more responsibility, but you're probably still doing a lot of repetitive things. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's kind of up to you. That's how I see most people's careers. You're either in that state for a long time, mm-hmm. or you have moved on to higher management levels because that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Or you're asking questions and people are offering you things.
Yeah.
I don't see it as unrealistic. I see it as quick in some ways for you to have achieved the success in your career that mm-hmm. you've achieved, because I know what you've accomplished.
Yeah.
But in other ways, I feel like it's very on point with somebody who has leadership qualities, mm-hmm. which I definitely see in you. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this a bunch, but like, I don't think it's coming from, on either of our points, a place of ego necessarily. It's just coming from a place of positioning ourselves in a positive way.
Right. Yeah, and I guess the last question I have for you, and then we can jump into some of my background and story, is did you ever consider or did you ever have any upward career growth from a job transition? Because I know you've transitioned. I have never transitioned yet.
Another thing that we haven't talked about, but maybe we'll talk about either at the end or after you've talked, is money. And there's a difference between making a change in a firm for lateral. I still see it as growth, lateral growth, mm-hmm. because even though it's maybe in a similar position, you're either getting more money or you're getting a better opportunity at that new place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that I sort of detached, who doesn't want to make more money? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't think it's like anybody wants to make, no, please take away my check. Please, I would like to make less money for you. Nobody ever says that.
Yeah.
Everybody's trying to grow in their career, but also grow financially. So I think one of the things that's important for that transition is knowing what your goal is. So in my instance, from transitioning from one job to the other, I wanted a different experience, mm-hmm. a different experience in terms of the, let's say the positive reviews I had heard about the place I was going to was that they were a very well-receiving, sort of family-oriented place.
Yeah.
And I was getting it to a point where I had been working at the first job for 6 or 7 years. I wanted to change anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted something that was different from the experience I had at the other place, mm-hmm. and at the first place. And it wasn't necessarily that it was all good or bad at one place or the other. Mm-hmm. Every place you will ever work at has pros and cons, and you just have to balance what's important to you,
mm-hmm.
whether you are okay with working long hours or you want a bigger paycheck or whatever. Tailor your experience to what you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the growth that happened from one place to the other was that trying a different formula for how to work helped me understand what kinds of experiences were out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like there wasn't one way to run an architecture office.
Yeah.
There's not one way to do everything. I think the thing that is a sort of a blessing in disguise is that when you come from one place for being there for so long, you start to take for granted what you could be missing out on, but also you are reminded of what really does work.
Yeah.
When you find out that that little piece isn't working at the new place that you go to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like I made a huge financial gain in terms mm-hmm. of when I was moving, because that wasn't my intent. My intent was to try a different position,
right?
Knowing that I would have different opportunities and in some ways better opportunities mm-hmm. at the new place.
Yeah.
Like if you feel like you're going somewhere just to go somewhere, that's probably not the right reason to switch a job.
Right.
I was very strategic about what I wanted from the next place. And I actually had, when I was shopping myself around in some ways, you know, I didn't just look at one place. I looked and got offers from like three or four different places and ended up going to the one I wanted to go to based on a number of factors. One of the things that some people don't talk about that is a proponent here of career growth is, like, let's say you don't like certain factors about the place you're working at. Don't look at places that are exactly like identical to the way that that other place works, because you're just going to get stuck in the same rut of, oh, well, I have this issue. Oh, I guess I had this issue before.
Yeah.
I tried to go to a place that was going to fulfill a completely different set of things. It's not something that I think a lot of people talk about, but it's really important to not just look at one factor overall. Like, money cannot be, and I think it's the factor that people talk about the most when they talk about job change. It can't be the one thing that you all like hang everything on, because you might be more miserable for more money going somewhere else.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you said. One of the important parts of it is positioning yourself. And I think that's the biggest part to how your career grew. And the interesting side of it, and I, knowing you a little bit better, I know this isn't really all there is to it, but based on how you were talking about your career growth, it sounded very passive. It sounded kind of like, oh, I went in and I just kind of like laid out these little things that someone would find. I just put the breadcrumbs out there for the partners to see, and hopefully they would catch on, but that wasn't the case. There were instances where you might have needed to confront the partner and say, hey, we need to meet. Like, I feel like I should be working on X or Y, or hey, where do you see me in 3 years? Whatever. Like, but that confrontation is necessary for some things.
Yeah, so two things you hit on that I think are really important. I have always been doing side hustles since the day I got out of school. I've been working on my own stuff because I realized that one day, similar to your 30 by 30 project, I needed to create a body of work that was mine, that I had entire agency over. And that was not, you know, when you work in a design field or a creative field, the stuff that you're working on, usually for your employer, is owned by the employer. So it's tough to, unless they give you authorization, to take that with you as something, oh, I did this or I did that. And that as a, you know, so while it does sound kind of passive, the those were my day-to-day 9-to-5 milestones, but I was always working on this competition or that thing or this thing as a way to, over time, over, you know, until I got to a time where I am now, have, like, I look back at all the things that I've done, and it's kind of, it's a little crazy. And I'm just saying that because, you know, I didn't have that same feeling 2 or 3 years in, but I had that feeling even like a couple years ago, where it's just like I started noticing that there was like this body of stuff that, whether it was things that I could say on my resume or things that I could say or show people, it was really important to me that I was always doing something beyond just the punch in, punch out. Now, what you said also with the conversation, I think, is super important. And I know from our conversations that you do this way better than I do. This is like one of the things I admire about you most, that you like don't take anybody's garbage. And you just are like, I'm going to, if something's bothering me, I'm going to talk about it. Because I am, as a personality, even though I'm very passionate about certain things, I am very laid back when it comes to having most, like, if a bad situation comes up, I address it, but I don't get very heated. I know people who have very, very huge sort of anger management issues. I'm not one of those people. I get very frustrated, and I get very, complainy about things. But I don't like get super, super heated. And I've treated a lot of my sort of day-to-day decisions that way, so that it might come off that way, but I'm almost like master planning behind the scenes. Like, this is, I'm working sort of on this thing, I'm working on this thing. And then one day I sort of, you know, like, so I've had those instances where a project comes and sits in my lap, basically. I'm like, okay, well, this is one or two levels above where I'm supposed to be. I need to get paid better, because I'm going to have like twice as much responsibility. You know, those conversations do have to happen. I think it's a matter of timing, though. It's a matter of knowing if you're either, and this comes, this unfortunately in the on the bad side of it comes from my sort of predisposition to being in a recession.
Yeah.
You know, I was very thankful for a long time that I even had a job.
Yeah.
There was not a time to be like, hey, when are you going to increase my salary? When are we going to have that discussion? When are we going to have this this uptick?
Yeah. Well, the only reason why I point that out is because that is the difference between us.
Right.
The fact that for and it's not even between us.
Sure.
I think from based on my discussion with all of my peers and colleagues over, you know, the nation, is that every designer, I would say 95% of designers out there are passive.
Yep.
And that's just how we are.
Sure.
I mean, how many designers have designed a free project? Everyone. How many designers do compositions and pay money to offer your submission for free?
Right, right.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just the nature of our business for some odd reason. That's just how we've come to be.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I want an opportunity. I got to do it for free for you. Yeah. Right? And I think it's a really big issue because that's what holds a lot of people back.
Yeah.
The fact that we think we can lay out breadcrumbs and hope that someone's going to pick each one up, right? But if you view a business from a managerial perspective, from upper management, and you look at it and you ask yourself, well, if I owned a business and I wanted profitability, what's the most traditional way of doing it? By not giving you a raise, by not giving you a higher position, by letting you do what you do until I run you dry. And then after that, I just made my money. And honestly, like, you know, that's just how it is. Thankfully, a lot of firms aren't that way anymore.
Sure.
But that is how a lot of firms operate. It's how do I get more out of you? How do I squeeze this lemon until there's no more juice, right? And I think that's where we differ. I thought your career movement also happened from transitioning job to job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think before I share my story, it's important to share a story of a friend of mine who did what you're talking about, who transitioned for money, and the reasons why I think that's bad. So a friend of mine who I grew up with and whatever.
Now, when you say a friend of yours, it's legitimately a friend of yours, not like...
Yeah. It's a friend of mine.
Not like, hey, this is for a friend of mine.
No. And so a friend of mine, he wanted to move around, right? He didn't like where he started. He thought he was worth more. He thought position-wise, he should have had a higher position, and pay-wise, he should have been paid more. So he made a transition for those two reasons, right? With 2 years of experience, maybe, out of school.
Okay.
He moved to a different firm as the assistant project manager, or the associate project manager, or whatever. So he got paid a lot more. His bump was pretty high, right? Uh-huh. The day he started, he was immediately put on a site project, had no experience, never worked at a contractor on site before. Went out there, didn't know how to operate, didn't know how to talk, didn't know how to speak, never had guidance. There's not much more to the story besides the fact that after a month, he was overburdened, right? He took on way more than he could chew. He had no guidance. He had no mentorship. He basically got a position that he thought he was going to enjoy. It was the position he thought he could fill the shoes for.
Sure.
And I think that's one of the other things that you kind of hinted on, where you're talking about how younger people who join a firm, they clock in and clock out.
Yep.
At the same time, there are other younger people who start at a firm who believe, you know, I could do this person's role. Like, I should be there. And I could do that today. Well, if they were there today and they didn't have the guidance to get them there, there's no way you're going to have a client meeting if you've never had one before. Like, it's just not going to happen, right?
Yeah. I mean, not to cut you off, but like it actually just made me cringe a little bit because I was thinking about, think about it as, I'm going to just make this analogy simple. When you're playing a video game, okay, and you have a spread of level 1 as your character can do almost nothing, and 50, let's say, or maybe 10 is an easier model. 10 is like you are super awesome at this game. You are like the best. You have all the skills, all the levels. Mm-hmm. You're a master. You're like the best video game character ever.
Right.
But it takes you a time to play that game to get from 1 to 10.
Yeah.
And I think about a career the same way, as in, I would never tell somebody who is at the first level to try to do anything that the level 10 person is doing.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many steps in between that, like, even to be a even to be a partner at the firm that I am at right now,
mm-hmm.
has a completely different skill set than what I have. I'm not saying that I couldn't necessarily run a firm, but I couldn't run the firm that I am currently working at because of X, Y, and Z. There are so many factors and so much experience that happens between one and the end that you can't, like, your friend was probably going from like a 1 to a 6 or a 1 to a 5 in certain characteristics.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that your friend didn't have skills that were already highly leveled in certain areas of their career.
Yeah.
But you can't.
You just do, and I think at the end of the day, you can't skip.
Yeah, like, you can't skip.
Like you have to complete your quests, right?
Right.
Like you have to do it. And that is life. Like there are things, milestones that you have to hit before you can move on.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I share that story only because there are people who believe that. But there are also people on the opposite end who have way more experience than they should have as an intern.
Sure.
Right? That should be at the next level.
Yep.
Whatever level that might be, they should be there.
Yep.
And so I think that story is important because it'll help a lot more people who think that they're ready to take on a managerial level but have never had client meetings, negotiations, design guides, things like that. Like, if you've never had that before, you can't just jump in a role. You have to start by assisting it first, like you said, helping out. And then if that person transitions, or if you feel like you could take it on, you let them know, hey, let me try and take this project on, take it off your hands, and then you can guide me when I need it.
Right.
And so I think that story is good for that reason. In terms of my career growth, it's been a lot different because I have negotiated a lot. And it's not just negotiating within the firm itself. It's also negotiating with myself and like figuring out what is it that I want.
Yep.
So I have a plan, right? Like I always say,
that doesn't surprise me.
I have a plan for my growth and where I need areas of experience.
Yep.
And when I hit a certain area of experience and I have that milestone, I have a meeting. So every year I have 1 to 4 meetings, right? And this isn't like just meetings with anyone.
Yeah.
It's meetings with the owner of the firm or it's meetings with partners.
Yeah, I like snicker a little bit or laugh because that's not what you should be doing. That's almost like what you probably should be doing.
Yeah.
I think that before you keep going, it's very common for people to never ask for a meeting.
Right.
Especially if it's not baked into a place.
Right.
But the fact that you do that is very uncommon, but very awesome.
Yeah.
So continue.
So just to give a backstory to that, I didn't even think about it because to me it's just natural to do. So I would say, and you might be able to talk about it, but like I would say I'm a little different than most people are in how I approach my career and how I approach my life. Like I don't have senses of feeling awkward about approaching you and saying, "Hey, Mike, I need a $10,000 bonus." Right? I'll just tell you it. I won't even laugh. I'll just tell you, hey, it's $10,000 or I'm done. Right? And yeah, I don't go in and ask for a $10,000 bonus. That was just an example. But I don't feel awkward. To me, it's like I can ask for something and sit there and stare at you and just wait in silence, total silence. And I'll feel like, wow, that was fun. You know? But not everyone has that. And I know that because whenever we chit-chat in my office and just joke about like, you know, things that we've done that might be awkward, right? Like there was an example I heard and I tried. Going to a coffee shop and asking for a 10% discount.
Yeah.
No one ever thinks about doing it, but when you do it and you just ask, hey, can I get a 10% discount on my coffee? You'd be surprised the responses you get from the other end, right?
Right.
But just asking gets you out of that comfort zone. So anyway, with that in mind, after starting my career off, I was so into the things I was doing. I didn't leave magazines. I got so into the design side of things, and I was in doing competitions. I was always at the firm, like to the point where one of the partners called me on Thanksgiving and asked if I was in the office because he needed something. And I was like, no, I'm not in the office. I'm in New York City. Like, you know, I like way far from the office.
Right.
And it wasn't because he was trying to take advantage of me. It was more that I became known as the guy that was always here.
Sure.
And then I'm not saying anyone else should do that at all. Like, that's not what people should be doing.
Yeah.
And after that, 2 years into my career, I was like, okay, I've developed enough to know that I'm a designer at this point. Like, I am helping with the design side of projects. I'm helping with putting together documents. But I do know I still need some construction experience here and there.
Yeah.
2 years in, I was like, hey, I'm ready to become a designer. Like, that's what my role should be. Had a chit-chat, whatever. That I kind of stepped into that role.
Yep.
And then a year later, I got my license to be an architect. So then I was like, hey, I'm ready to be an architect. So I'm project architect. It didn't just happen on my third year. It actually took a year to prove it, like prove that I have that skill. And then after that, I got put onto a project for construction because I asked for it. I sat down with the owner of the company and one of the things that's great is when you start at a company who listens, with management that listens to you, you can ask for things and let them know what responsibilities you want to take on.
Right.
So just like you said, you can't just grow into a role and say, hey, you know, I think I'm ready for that next one. You have to put yourself out there and you have to take on the uncomfortable responsibilities that you've never taken before.
Now, the other thing I will say, and those are all really great points.
Yeah.
I think I was talking earlier about sort of being fortunate in taking on different roles.
Yeah.
That also has worked against me.
Yeah.
So you were talking about building different skills, seeing it as almost like different buckets of things that you
right.
need to know about construction or like drawing or yeah. whatever, managing people. I've had very fortunate opportunities to take over projects only for them to never get built.
Right.
For one reason or another. They never actually make it to construction because they lost funding or this thing happened or whatever. And my one bucket of this kind of construction knowledge is a little bit different and a little bit less than maybe some other people that are in my career position.
Right.
And so like that for me has been the thing I've been working on the last like 2 years is really trying to get into, like, I've been fortunate enough that the main project I'm working on right now is in construction.
Right.
It's something I'm passionate about learning more about in that project.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't had that for the majority of my career.
Mm-hmm.
I've been helping here, helping there. And it's not that I haven't asked for it, but I think to sort of not counterpoint to what you're saying, but I'll add to it, is that letting people know what you're interested in is the first step, but don't be super discouraged if you don't get it right away.
Yeah.
It's just about repetition and talking to that person again.
Right.
And I think a lot of people get discouraged if they're even brave enough to do what you're talking about. Because I do think it does take a lot of confidence to do what you do.
It does. And so for me, when I ask for these things, right, I'll ask the owner of the company. I'll say, hey, look, I think I'm ready to grow into this role. This is my plan for this and for that. And after that discussion, I slowly transition into it. And I've been fortunate enough that I can transition all the time because we have those projects.
Yep.
But also because I voiced my concerns my plan.
Yeah.
I laid it out. And one of the things that came from one of my meetings is that the owner of the company was very happy that for all of the meetings I've attended with them, I lay out my plan. Not only do I lay out my plan, I talk about what skills I've gained, the areas that I've been improving on, and how I've been improving on them, and what areas I would like to learn in, and why.
Yeah.
And then after that, I ask, well, where can I improve? Where do you see room for improvement?
So that touches on an interesting topic, and we haven't really talked about it too much, but how do you address things that you feel like, and this is about career growth, but how do you address things that you know you are not deficient in, but maybe you're either not doing, I don't want to say not doing correctly, but you're not doing as well as you know you could.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you mostly address the things that you know you need help on, or do you really reach for that feedback to sort of figure out what those things are?
I do it for two reasons. So I'll touch on all of those points. The first one is I'll ask for feedback on where I can improve.
Sure.
The reason why I ask for that feedback from the owner of the company or the partner that I talk to is because that's the only way you'll ever know if they know what you even do.
Right.
And I say that because that's very important.
Sure.
I've asked one partner something before, and what that partner said had absolutely nothing to do with what I've been working on for the past 3 years.
Yeah.
And out of six years, that's kind of sad, honestly. And I said that. And it's not to be mean or cruel. It's the fact that you can't have a discussion with me if you don't even know me.
Right.
So why would you bring that up? And for me to say it the way I just said it to you, that's the kind of confidence that you need. You just agreed and you like accepted that at face value. Like, wow, Tim really had a good point,
right?
But not everyone can do that. Not everyone can just say that to someone above them and feel like, wow, you know, I really meant it, you know? And from that discussion, I always ask, where can I improve? Because that's when you know that the person you're talking to even knows you, right? How many people work at a firm where they might be invisible because they're so passive? I think 95% of the people are passive. And that's when you ask that question and you realize, wow, this person just thinks I sit here in Illustrator all day making cartoons.
Right.
When in reality, I've been talking to their clients for the past 10 years with the product manager.
Yep.
And yet the product manager is getting the raise, or they're getting this, or they're getting that, and they're getting bumped up to a senior. And it's the big reason why I ask. After I get the feedback, I listen to it, and I deconstruct it for what's biased.
Right.
There are a lot of biased things that
That's
can come
point.
Out of that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, if I'm telling you how you can improve, I'm going to tell you something that can always be improved.
Sure.
Right? I can say something like, well, Mike, in terms of your construction experience, you can get better at reducing the time frame in which it takes to build a project. What does that mean?
Right.
Nothing, right? And so you have to take those things right. and throw them out and say, okay, that's not worth focusing on. But when it comes out to something like, I think you can get better at looking at your documents to try and capture the areas that we can fix before the contractor finds them, I think that makes a little more sense. However, that's also half biased because you can't find some issues until
right.
you see it in the field,
yep.
right? And so you have to be able to deconstruct the feedback in that way. And then once that's done, the biggest part to me is at that same meeting, letting them know what role I'm aiming to grow into and the time frame in which I hope to grow into it.
Yeah.
And why, and I put that out there because if they know what my goal is and they see me working towards it and they don't help me meet it, I have to make these meetings about me meeting goals. It's not about my money. It's not how much you pay me. I could care less, right? It's about me reaching this point in my career so that I can do something that I want to do,
right?
right? If I want to start a firm, I know I got to get there. I need these skills.
Right.
And I got to focus on that. So touching on another point that you made earlier about, you know, some people might think they're ready for a project manager role, but they're not yet ready.
Right.
Yep. I'm going to just put it out there, and this is a later topic for a different day,
okay.
that not every project manager should be a project manager. So when you see a project manager that's not doing what you think a project manager should be doing, they're probably not.
Right.
And yeah, you could do what they're doing, but some people are just in it for the money. There are, I have seen people and I have talked to people who told me about project managers who are just like not doing something that is in their description or in their role. Like a project manager for an architecture firm isn't really a project manager. They're trying to do architecture and project management.
Right.
A project manager is a totally different role.
Right.
And so when you have a project manager who hovers over you and directs you and, like, you know, micromanages you and tells you to move something two pixels left or right and this and that, that's not really a project manager. Or if a project manager comes in and leaves early and comes in late all the time, it's, you know, it's like, what are they doing? You don't want that role, right? You don't want to be them. Because if you're them and you're just taking their bad habits, you're going to be a bad project manager.
I think, so. I think there are, what's the best way to put it? There are some skills that you realize over time, especially for something like architecture, it probably applies to most creative fields, but you need to know so many different facets
mm-hmm.
in the profession to be successful that I think sometimes people don't realize that when you want to be higher in your career, it doesn't always necessarily mean vertically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or better in your career or reach something else, it doesn't mean vertically.
Right.
Because something that comes with experience that you realize is that, just as you said, being a project manager of something, you might theoretically not even need to be trained as an architect mm-hmm. to be a good project manager. And I
right.
say because it comes down more to managing people, communication, mm-hmm. things that, yes, you should definitely have some kind of experience of what that thing is to manage it.
Yeah.
But you don't need to necessarily know everything about every little nuance. A perfect example is the software that is used at some firms to create the drawings that make the building mm-hmm. possible. A lot of project managers don't even know how to use that software now
yeah.
because they're managing the people who do know how to use that.
Right.
And at the end of the day, they just need to know that the product that they end up with is the right product.
Right.
And the right service is the right service.
Right.
So the thing that I caution people sometimes on is if they don't have certain qualities or they don't have certain interests, project management for some, I'm thinking of a person right now in my own office who, she definitely wants to never be above a certain role.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with her ability to do that role.
Right.
It has to do with she enjoys doing the thing that she's doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes a different problem that maybe we can look at another time. But like, she has developed so many different skills that make her so valuable on any given team that like, she is sought after in the office to be on other people's teams.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of respect and that kind of admiration for somebody's skill set or somebody's drive in a very specific way
mm-hmm.
may be more valuable to a firm than whether or not every single person rises to the same project title
right.
every single time. You know, you and I tend to share similar leadership qualities where we want to be in those roles, where I don't necessarily see myself directly as a project manager all mm-hmm. the time, and I don't necessarily want to be a project manager all the time. But I know that I have a drive that naturally leads me in that direction.
Yeah.
And not everybody has to have that. I think that's the other thing is like when I talk to people about their career development, their growth, it's not always vertical. Sometimes it's becoming more niche and more interested in nuances of something specific.
Yeah. And the other, so just finishing off on my whole story and negotiation and then moving into one other area to end this episode. So negotiating is a big thing. And I don't do it to like try and make it seem like, oh, I'm better than someone else or I'm better than someone in the firm or that I'm worth this or that.
Right.
I do it because I'm trying to attain something and I make that clear. It's like, this is where I want to be. And this is my goal to getting there. And this is how I can get there. And this is what I'd like to do. Is there any way that you see this fitting into the firm? And is there any way that you can get me there? You know, like what projects are out there now? And then I'll look through all of the project schedule too. So I'll just be vigilant. And when I see a project coming on, I'll ask, hey, can I get on this project in this capacity? And that's really helped me get to the point that I have, you know, just voicing it, letting my plan be out there for the partners, letting them understand where I hope to be in a time frame, and then working towards that. And it's worked out every year. Like, I've gotten so much more responsibility than I ever felt like I was comfortable taking. But because I let them know I don't have this kind of skill, they would pair me with someone who can teach me that along the way. And then that really helped me grow exponentially. So negotiating should never be about you thinking you're better than the owner or you think that you're better than the partner. It should always be about, hey, this is where I'm at. This is where I'm trying to go. This is everything I've done. How can I get there? And then salary negotiating is a totally different topic. Like, this is just for career development.
Yep.
And then the last part that I wanted to touch on is just this whole topic came up because at a lot of firms and a lot of my friends that I talk to, it always comes up because people have been working for like 6 years and they are stuck in their spot, right? They're like, they're really stuck. And the only ways that they can think of to get out of it now is to move on to a different firm. And then this idea of moving has become the norm for moving upwards. It is true in some ways. I'm not going to deny that. Like, I have a friend who has done that and has not only gotten big salary bumps, but has also gotten big role bumps and they fit into it. And they've done great.
Right.
Had they stayed at the firm where they are, they would have never gotten anywhere. They would have been stuck in that role. And then after 10 years, they would have moved up one level.
Sure.
And that sucks. I'm just going to put that out there. Like, if you're getting paid $30,000 for 10 years, you should probably not have stayed. Like, just no one should ever get that.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're making $30,000 in a different country, like, you know, Bangkok or whatever, and it's worth a lot more. You know, like, getting paid $30,000 for 10 years with no raises, with no position, nothing like that, it's not helping you grow in any way, right? If you're suddenly 50 years old and all you've been doing is drafting millwork, like custom cabinets for people, or you've just been making the same logos and graphics for the same one company for 20 years, what are you going to do? You know, if the firm closes their doors, you can't transition to a different firm and say, hey, I can make this logo by hand. Like, I'm a hand letterer, you know? Like, you have to have picked up skills. The only way you can pick up the skills is by moving up, moving out, moving, you know? You have to expand. And this is a big issue. And I think if you're stuck because your firm isn't allowing you to grow and you haven't had these discussions to try and grow, then maybe it is time to consider moving. But if you've had the discussions and you are slowly growing, maybe it's the fact that you have to face yourself and look at it and say, do I have the skill to take that next level of leadership?
Sure.
Or should I continue growing first? Right? There's a lot of backstory and back driving that has to go into this. Like, you have to go in reverse and look at yourself before you even consider that next step.
Yep.
You know, like, I never go in without having that plan in front of me and the partner I'm going to talk to. I have to have the plan written out so that I can tell them, this is everything I've done. This is everything that I'm doing now. This is what I want to be doing this year. And then I lay the plan out and that's it. If they can get me into that next part, they'll get me into the next part. And in a lot of cases, they would get me in the next part and a little bit more of the next one.
Yep.
You know, and each time I set up that meeting, I know that it triggers something in them that's like, oh no, he's going to ask about this. Right? He's going to ask me about his role and why he hasn't gotten any responsibility yet. And it's not that I'm looking for that fear from them. It's that I like conditioning them to know that I'm going to be asking for this and an update on it.
I think you bring up a really good point that can really clear the air a little bit too with the people you're talking to. So like, because of the circumstances of my first job and being in the recession, et cetera, at the heart of the recession, it was difficult for me to ask for feedback because I naively associated that always with a money request,
yeah.
Like that it always had to be money.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. And actually going in with the expectation of money is probably the wrong way to do it anyway.
Yeah.
But what that means for me is like, if you, as you said, you're kind of priming the people you're talking to have that discussion with you based on the things that you're interested in, then I think it's really important to put it out there and possibly even say, I'm not asking for money. I just want to, because I think the person on the other end of the table always has the expectation from staff.
Yeah.
Regardless of who they're talking to, that money will have to come up.
Right.
And I feel like if you were able to have the courage and the confidence to say, look, I just want to know where I stand.
Yeah.
I've been here for 6 months, a year. You know, most places do have or say they have a 3 month, 6 month, year review for your first year.
Yeah.
A lot of places don't actually execute that. So it's difficult to really keep up. But if you're the person who goes to somebody and says, look, I don't know necessarily where I stand with you. This is kind of where I see myself going. And to put that out into the world, in the world of the firm, and say, look, I'm interested in these things. How do I... I've always found that having the discussion with an owner, somebody I work with who knows that I care as much about their business as I care about my career. Like saying, for example... what skill can I learn in the next 6 months or the next year that will not only help me, but also make you more profitable? You know, it's asking it and maybe positioning it in a way where you are trying to help you and the business you're working for at the same time. Adding that little detail into it and trying to understand where you stand, I think is one of the most important things you can do to actually grow your career beyond just doing things on your own and trying to figure out your own career.
Yeah.
Because it really sets you apart. I think your point about 90% of people are really passive is spot on, because a lot of people are just happy with the fact that they have a job. Mm-hmm. They don't really know how to grow in the job and they just want to keep working.
Yeah.
They're usually really busy. You don't know what you're doing or what you could do to improve, so you just keep working. And I think, you know, if you literally just start asking questions, that will set you apart from the majority of people in the workforce,
right?
Regardless of the profession, regardless of anything related to your day-to-day job, you will just be that person that the owner looks to and says, look, I know you're special because you're asking me these questions.
Yeah. And to end this episode, I think my advice for anyone looking for career growth or who has been passive for the past 6, 10 years, whatever it might be, is to take the time to write out what you've done every year since you started.
Yeah.
Write it all out, right? Write out the details of the project tasks that you've taken on and generalize it at first, and then jump into some nitty-gritties for things that you particularly remember, because that's your skill set, that's your focus in some way. And then when you have that written out, write out what you're currently doing and then what you hope to be doing. And then look at that list and see what kind of roles and responsibilities that entails.
Right.
And then eventually get to a point where you can guide someone through it and say, this is what I've been doing, this is what I'm doing now, and this is where I want to be. And get feedback from that person, but make sure it's a person who can help you get there.
Yep.
And in some ways, it'll be enlightening because you'll see that there are things you think you're doing well, but in reality, you're wasting a lot of time. And I don't say that in a mean way. I say it in terms of a lot of people who are trying to have upward movement in their career. There are two types of people. There are the people who are very efficient at what they do, and there are people who are not as efficient. There are people who waste time, right? And if you can get to a state of efficiency where you can distinguish between a time-wasting activity and you can get that out of the way, or you can focus on the ones that have more prevalence, right? Things that are the higher importance of tasks, and you start to grow there,
right.
You'll immediately start growing into a higher role rather than focusing on the little things and not growing at all. And an example of that in a personal life setting is people who signed up for 20,000 retail newsletters, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you get an email and you have 100 come in 1 minute, and you're like, I'm going to go through and unsubscribe from each one. And then you unsubscribe from each one and you're like, wow, I feel great. I was so productive. What did you really do? You just undid something that you did years ago. And that's not really productivity.
Right.
Productivity would be getting rid of that a long time ago or setting up a system to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And then focusing on a big task like designing a house or designing the project or getting a portfolio started for yourself, right? Or even doing pro bono work on the side and just letting people know, hey, I'm doing this pro bono project for my church, for an organization I'm a part of. And eventually you start to find that efficiency is not just about doing the things that are in front of you. It's more about taking on the larger tasks and then doing those. The smaller things can wait. And then as you start doing that, you start growing into those important roles faster.
Right.
And people start to rely on you for those things. And eventually you'll be in that role without even knowing that you're in it, you know? And then when a partner starts to give you those roles and responsibilities to do, then that's your moment to say, wow, I made it. Like, I'm in this role. Let me have this discussion.
Yep.
You know, but until you can analyze the things you're doing and you can get to that state of efficiency and you can get into that role without even asking for it, I don't know if you can have that meeting and grow into it.
Right.
You might not be ready for that if all you do is sit at your desk and like do the meaningless tasks. If those meaningless tasks are too easy, maybe you can bring that up now and say, look, these are too simple. I'd like to get something more challenging.
And I would add, maybe just as a caution, is that I don't think you're saying to not know how to do all the basic things.
I think
you're saying stay there as a foundation. Know, take architecture as an example. You need to know how certain things come together so that you can understand how the bigger picture of the building kind of comes together as a whole. You can't do the whole building without knowing individual pieces first.
Right.
And so what you're kind of hinting at is saying, understand and try to take ownership over the things that you can learn while you're in it. Become more efficient with that stuff.
Yeah.
And then over time, then you can kind of have those discussions. But I think to one of your original points when we started talking, you can't just go from, you know, knowing almost nothing to just saying, okay, well, I want to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, you have to know something to have the conversation first.
Yeah.
So I think part of the expectation for your career has to be that you will spend some time learning some skills first, and then you can build on those exponentially depending on how you want your career to shake out.
Yeah.
But if you don't know some of the basic stuff, you know, even like the simplest conversation I could think of having with an employer is, what are the basic things I need to know first?
Yeah.
You know, even starting there, if you really do want to have a conversation initially, maybe even when you get hired, if you're coming right out of college or you're coming out of whatever, and having just a very frank discussion, like, what are the things that you see people needing to know initially?
Yeah.
And then getting really good at those. And then, you know, if you become, you know, aggravated or you feel like the job is too simple, then ask for that next level of responsibility.
Yeah, I think that's good. And then if you're a passive person and you're not used to asking for these things, or you're not used to confronting yourself and looking at what you're doing,
yep.
I think it's all about taking baby steps. Yep. You know, like, don't take a leap. Right. Sometimes taking the leap will lead down the wrong road. So take baby steps or take normal steps, but don't jump too far where you take on more than you can chew. Yep. So, all right. Well, thanks for listening to Career Growth, guys.
Thanks.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to another episode of Unpacking Design. And you can check us out anytime at the unpackingdesign.com website.
And you can also find us on iTunes and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. Please remember to leave a review and share this podcast with someone you know.